from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Close to 15,000 homes were damaged or destroyed in the fires that ravaged the North Bay in October. As residents decide whether or not to rebuild, many are facing a daunting crisis, a shortage of contractors and construction workers who were stretched thin even before the fires. This hour, we talk about the Bay Area's overburdened construction industry and what it means for the speed and cost of new construction in the fire zones and throughout the area. It's coming up after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. When the smoke cleared after the massive North Bay fires in October, 8,900 structures were found destroyed. And as residents decide whether to rebuild or leave, they face daunting circumstances, including a construction industry that was already overstretched. In this hour of Forum, we're going to talk about the Bay Area's construction labor shortage and what it means for efforts to quickly rebuild in the fire zones. And joining us by phone is Keith Woods. He's CEO of the North Coast Builders Exchange. They're a construction association serving Sonoma, Lake, Mendocino, and Napa counties. And welcome, Keith Woods.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate being here.
Appreciate having you here. He's with us, actually, by ISDN in studio. Robert Eiler is also with us. He's professor of economics and dean of the School of Extended and International Education at Sonoma State. Welcome, Robert Eiler.
Thank you, Michael.
And Kathy Goodacre joins us as well. She's executive director of the Career Technical Education Foundation. Welcome, Kathy Goodacre.
Good morning, Michael, and thank you.
Good morning to you, and thank you for being with us. And Tim Leach is here with us in studio. He chairs the Build and Rebuild Initiative, which is part of Habitat for Humanity in Sonoma County. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me begin, if I may, Keith Woods, with you. And let's begin just by talking about how severe the situation is when we survey all that. I was looking at a figure that just is shocking, over 200,000 tons cleaned up just from the Santa Rosa fires alone and all of these structures that have burned to the ground. I have to ask, I guess, at this point, I mean, there wasn't enough labor to go around after the recession, not enough young people to get into the work. So we're facing a real labor shortage, but also material shortage, aren't we?
Well, it's a huge problem, Michael. What we're faced with is a disaster that's a magnitude we've never experienced before. Very few people have, and even in the U.S. There was a problem of people retiring from construction and not enough young people entering the field before this massive destruction. So this has exacerbated it beyond, at the moment, our capability to deal with it. I don't want to load you down with facts and figures here, but the National Association of Home Builders did a study recently of their members, and what they learned was for every 5 retiring construction workers in the U.S., there's only one entering construction, and that's not a ratio that we can sustain very long.
Well, you have many more licensed licensed contractors. You have far fewer than the number of houses that we have to see to, and a lot of these contractors were really quite busy before the fires. So there's a fight going on for workers now and materials, as I mentioned. There's kind of what you call a perfect storm in many ways.
Oh, absolutely right. And there were more structures lost than there are licensed contractors in the 4-county North Bay area. And again, that's not a great ratio. Those contractors, both general and subs, might be ready to go to work and help people rebuild, but they're all going to struggle to find the people to do the actual construction. Right now, I talked to a lot of contractors who are members of ours, and the initial problem is framers. And I hadn't heard that, but of all of the elements of construction, nothing happens till you get a house framed, and they are in very short supply. So we've got our work cut out for us to try to train and develop a new young workforce to go into the building industry.
Well, we should also mention there are many unlicensed contractors who are trying to take advantage of this, and there are a lot of scams going on, and there's a big problem with the fact that nationwide, we've had so many disasters this year that this is a problem throughout the West, but it's also a problem with respect to just getting the contractors and the laborers that we need. There's nation competition going on. There's competition going on now in Southern California after the wildfires there.
Yeah, that my heart goes out to them in Southern California, but that has made the problem of finding people to oversee the rebuilding project and to find the workers, many of them from around the country that normally would come to a disaster like ours, are down in Florida. They're down in Houston. They now will look at Southern California in their own backyard rather than come up here. So none of this, there's never a good time for disasters of this magnitude, but boy, in rapid succession, this has made it really difficult on the labor supply.
Keith Woods, again, is CEO of the North Coast Builders Exchange. They're a construction association that serves Sonoma, Lake, Mendocino, and Napa counties. And Robert Eiler is professor of economics and dean of the School of Extended and International Education at Sonoma State. And in the whole picture here that we're trying to provide our listeners, Robert Eiler, we've also got prices going up. We've got costs, and particularly construction costs, rising.
Correct. And this is a trend that's been on the way for the last 3 or 4 years. This is not new. Now it's just, as Keith suggested, exacerbated by what's been happening regionally and beyond.
Well, with the labor shortage, and it had been a problem, as we said, even before this, we've got, during the recession particularly, we've got about a need for, well, how can this stretch out is really what I want to get to here. I mean, I know there's a picture of 1 year ahead and 3 years ahead. Can you break that down for us in terms of really getting on the stick here?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't think anybody could give you a strong prediction as to the timeline we're looking at here because there's so many different facets involved. I mean, in fact, right now, the one major timeline issue is, in fact, when the environmental piece will be done and allow for more traffic to go in. One of the things that's tricky about this situation is that specifically in Sonoma County, to a certain extent in Napa County, is that the homes that were lost are in concentrated areas where the logistics of getting in and out of there are somewhat tricky. So until the environmental cleanup is done and it's sort of declared as good to go, as Keith suggested, framing can't even begin. And until framing begins, you can't do anything else. And there's this sort of chain of dominoes that has to fall in a very specific order. And so that timeline is still up in the air.
And people want their neighborhoods back, and they want this to move quickly. And, you know, the real challenge is, are many of these people going to stay? We did a whole program on that in the wake of what we're talking about here. We're also, can you kind of give us a picture from what you know, Robert Eiler, about insurance, underinsurance, and overinsurance, or not enough?
Sure. So there's a claim that, well, I shouldn't say it that way, but there is a piece of data that suggests there's about $11 billion of insurance claims in Sonoma County alone so far. And there's a lot of different anecdote out there about how many homes that were destroyed were actually underinsured. The belief from the insurance industry is that most insurance companies are probably going to look at the playing field and say, the best thing to do is ignite our reinsurance and basically get everybody up to fully covered as a way of just keeping the reputations in check to do the right thing. Potentially take advantage of the recent tax bill that's coming and, you know, look at driving down incomes that they're going to face in this year against what's going to happen next year. So I think you're going to see a lot of payouts that will be larger than the current insurance policies with the idea that the insurance companies can keep their reputation in check if there's any legal battles that are on the way in terms of whether or not they had fully insured or were underinsured. But nobody knows exactly yet how many homes were 100% underinsured, and a lot of that is still eye of the beholder issue in terms of how you intend to rebuild.
Again, we're talking to Robert Eiler, who is an economist and dean up at Sonoma State. Professor Eiler, Dean Eiler, are more young people going into the trades with this labor shortage, kind of skipping college so they can make money because the money's out there to be made?
Well, it certainly is a potential opportunity for students who are looking at summer, are looking at maybe taking a gap year and saying, wow, you know, if wages are going to rise enough to give me an opportunity, or I've been working for my father or my uncle or somebody else in construction for the last few years during summer anyway, this is a great opportunity. So from an education standpoint, I see two opportunities. One is that you're going to have students who are choosing to do this, and by doing that, they may be able to finance without debt the rest of their education. That's one opportunity. The second opportunity is for us to sort of refit where how we look at career education and recognize that we have an aging contractor workforce that that's now 10 years older than it was right after the recession ended. And by using this as an opportunity to train a new set of construction management, project management, and potential general contractors who have bachelor's degrees, or even just those that don't have them, but saying that, you know, over time we're going to need to sort of switch our contracting workforce, there's an opportunity here that actually has medium and long-term positive implications.
Well, let's bring Kathy Goodacre into this. She's Executive Director of Career Technical Education, the CTE Foundation. What are we doing about getting more young people in the trades, and how does that look from your perspective, Kathy Goodacre?
Well, as everybody keeps noting here, we had a challenge with this before this disaster, and it's just become more important. There's really a number of industry sectors, not only here in Sonoma County and the Bay Area region, but nationally, where we have really been short on inspiring and training our young people to pursue careers. So the trades is a really big one. It's already been noted here. We also have this gap in areas of manufacturing, agriculture, and health careers. So there's a lot of emphasis on how do we start to introduce and help our young people in high school and even as early as middle school start to explore and understand what these career opportunities are. So in this specific area, we had launched in partnership with the Builders Exchange and our Sonoma County Office of Education this past year a construction core program, because we knew we had an issue here. We have not been not only training but inspiring our young people to pursue these careers as very viable long-term opportunities for them. So we had we launched a construction corps that targeted high school seniors, inviting those students who think they might be interested in pursuing a career in the trades to join a 5-month long program where they were attending a class that local contractors were coming in and teaching skills and introducing them to their specific trade. It was an exploration opportunity for these young folks to really look at variety from electrical, solar, the HVAC, plumbing, carpentry, and more, so that they could possibly, you know, find their path into one of these careers. So from that program, they went into a 2-week boot camp, which was a really important piece for these young people. They need to understand what this work is like in the real world. You know, it's one thing to be in a woodshop class in high school or a construction class where they're building a tiny home. Great exposure, great skill, might even be a little inspiring, but it is nothing like the real world of the construction trades.
Amen.
Right, Keith?
Well, Kathy, let me also ask you about compensation, though, because there's certainly, I said there's more money to be made now and the costs are going up and so forth, but as I understand it, there really is no minimum wage in construction work up there.
Well, I think Keith can probably address this better, but we certainly, from our last program, the students that graduated had job offers at the end of the program, and many of them who took those offers started in the $18 to $20 wage, and
correct,
that's very entry-level position.
Yeah, I just want to get that clear, because I know there are a lot of young people listening who may indeed be thinking about getting into the trades, and wanted to hear specifically on the compensation. I also want to hear from Tim Leach, who's here with us in studio. And by the way, all the other guests are with us from KRCB Radio in Sonoma County, and thanks to them for setting all this up on ISDN lines. Tim Leach is chair of the Build and Rebuild Initiative and Habitat for Humanity, Sonoma County. Tim, how do you find the people that need you?
Well, this is really going to be one of the primary challenges that we are active with right now, Michael. As you probably know, Habitat, in its tradition, goes out and builds from scratch affordable homes. And but given the extent of the disaster in the wine country and Sonoma County in particular, our focus has been to try to reinvent our overall design and focus to be able to help wine country victim families as much as possible when those fire survivor families find themselves financially challenged to rebuild on their own. And that really gets into some of the issues of underinsurance or even lack of insurance that we're finding in the area. But our effort right now is to reach out and connect with fire survivor families directly. We've been in a more kind of a survey mode. As you may know, we have one of our services is what we call our restore effort, where we take in donated household goods and provide them to families in need. And we had a special program for the first 2 months after the fires to have Sundays as a dedicated day only for fire survivor victims. And we asked those families to help us understand them and what their needs are by filling out a survey. And so we've been collecting that data, but that's really just a sampling of the overall population. So now we're reaching out directly, and I'm going to be speaking to, for example, the block captains across one of the largest damaged neighborhoods in Santa Rosa right after the holidays and the new year to try to let them know that fire families that are really feeling challenged financially shouldn't despair. That Habitat is really trying to partner with them to help them get back in their homes.
Now you're ramping up. I know. I mean, you're bringing in some prefab construction. You're moving portions of labor from outside the area, right? And also ramping up new home construction. In fact, I think you had a goal of 600. Really within a decade, was that? And now it's going to be 600 within about 5 years?
Yes, we've accelerated our goal because the need is so great. And so we really to get to the target of the topic today about labor shortages, you touched, Michael, on prefab construction. And as we Habitat are looking at how to scale up, how to address and make a bigger impact on fire survivor families, we are going to be facing that labor shortage that you were asking about very directly, because most of the skilled labor in the construction industry is likely to be taken up by for-profit developers and contractors. And so coming in as a nonprofit, this is part of the reinvention. And we believe that one of our primary strategies will be to employ what we're referring to as prefab construction techniques in order to have either components of or whole houses be constructed or manufactured out of the area where there isn't a labor shortage, and then bring those finished materials into Sonoma County. We will have to build a foundation, and there's a shortage of foundation workers, and so that's a challenge. But we will build foundations, and then install these manufactured components of homes to try to get families back in homes as quickly as we can.
And you were talking about services and availability. I want to bring Keith Woods back in this because they have a tool replacement center for people who lost tools in the fire. And Keith, what about the role of policymakers in all of this? I mean, in terms of making it more easy to streamline and not having the hindrances in the way?
That's absolutely critical. That's the role government, one of the roles government should play is become a help, not a hindrance when people are ready to rebuild. Because historically, it's not been easy up in the North Bay to navigate the permit process when you want to build either residential or commercial. But I'll give them full credit at the County of Sonoma and at least so far at the City of Santa Rosa. They are working very hard to make sure that they are a help in this. They've added, contracted out for third-party services. They are trying to eliminate the red tape and instead roll out a red carpet, particularly for the fire victims. They've suffered enough without having to go through delays that are government-generated. So I give them high marks for effort so far. Once people seek the permits, we'll find out if they were able to pull it off. Our concern, Michael, is that those those housing developments, condos, apartments that were in the pipeline for permitting and inspection before the fires don't get ignored. And we've talked to them about that and said, we know your resources are stretched thin, but don't forget that the fastest housing you might see to add to our stock locally is those projects that were, in essence, are shovel-ready to go. And so make sure that they're not ignored, because that's part of the solution.
We're coming up on a break, and I want to give listeners an opportunity to join in here with any questions or comments you might have. We do welcome your involvement in the program, and please feel free to join us now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, you can call us now with any questions or comments you might have about really focusing on the labor shortage that's expected to slow fire rebuilding efforts and what to do about it. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I want to go to a listener question with you, Robert Eiler, if I may. Listener once says, I strongly believe that Donald Trump's anti-migrant workers policies played a major role in the shortage of labor in the fire zone.
I think certainly on the margin that the fear that some draconian measure is coming down, it has probably kept some folks from migrating northbound and coming up here in the normal season, and perhaps had some folks have gone back from where they originated. But I don't think it has been as massive a change as general media may have you believe, at least not regionally here. But, you know, 2018 is a new year and new political things may happen. So we're watching that very closely, because one of the things that we're testing right now is how critical that supply of labor is to keeping the efficiency level high in the rebuild.
Well, Tim Leach, I know there's concern about losing diversity among renters that you've expressed, but also how many people you think are likely to leave, particularly because this process can not necessarily – I mean, even if they speed it up, it's still a slow process.
It's going to be too slow for quite a number of people is our concern. And if you just focus on, for example, one of the most damaged neighborhoods in Santa Rosa, it's called Coffee Park, 1,300 homes, Coffee Park, and about 40% of those homes were actually rented out. And those renters generally, in our experience, have a shorter fuse, a shorter time frame of how long they can last. Unless they get some kind of more permanence in their lives from a housing point of view and a jobs point of view, and that would have long term effect, we believe, on both the economy of Sonoma County as well as, you know, kind of the cultural diversity of Sonoma County if they were to leave.
And Kathy Goodacre, we're coming out on a break here, but how many young people are we talking about getting into technical education? How many are you reaching for, and how many have you reached?
So through this Construction Corps program specifically that's targeting our high school students, this year we hope to put 60 students through the program, and we have right now about 35 students who've been accepted into the semester-long program starting in January. But I also want to mention there's an adult education Construction Corps program, really important for that over 18-year-old, some of the population that Rob Eiler was talking about. That is also starting in January, and it's a 3-week training program ready to go. So,
again, I want to hear from you, our callers, and those of you who are affected by the fires may want to call in and talk about where you are in the rebuilding effort or what is playing into or a factor in your decision to rebuild. Please join us, 866-733-6786, or by email, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're focusing on the rebuilding that is going on as we speak here and that needs to go on, and really need some desperate needs here. Just talking off mic with Tim Leach, in fact, about how underinsured so many of these homes that went down in the fires were, alas, and sadly, and just getting a sense of what the situation is, assessing it, and what needs to be done. As I said, Tim Leach is here with us in studio. He's chair of the Build and Rebuild Initiative with Habitat for Humanity in Sonoma County. And we also have Kathy Goodacre, executive director of the Career Technical Education Foundation, and Keith Woods, who is CEO of the North Coast Builders Exchange, and Robert Eiler, professor of economics and dean of the School of Extended and International Education at Sonoma State University. And we do invite your involvement in the program. You can join us by emailing us, forum at kqed.org or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum, or simply putting any questions or comments you might have right onto our website, kqed.org/forum. And let me just read a couple of comments here. Andrew writes, as a metal contractor, I know exactly what we are dealing with when it comes to labor shortages. The solution is three words: housing, housing, housing. Even drywallers making $20 an hour can't live in $2,000 a month apartments. I laugh when I hear homeowners in rich neighborhoods gasp at my pricing. And another listener says, why are we not preparing sites for temporary worker housing? And Robert Eiler, can I go to you on those?
So in terms of the housing prices, regionally speaking, Sonoma County is still a decent deal in terms of rental, but that's obviously been rising very quickly in the post-fire world. In terms of whether or not building more homes will solve that problem, we need to be clear that the number of units that we end up with may be less than the number of units that we started with. So one of the key concerns that going forward to the audience person's point is that if we end up doing the wrong thing in terms of rebuild or not providing the right incentive mechanisms, we could end up with fewer units, which will exacerbate the current housing situation. The hope is that, in fact, local and state government work as a team on trying to provide as many incentives as possible to put more units in the same spaces than what we started with. And there is new law on the books as of late 2016 to do just that. We will see how many people take advantage of that.
And let me take advantage of our callers and begin, Eric, with you. I think you're on point here, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi. I mean, my question is really, what is the connection between labor shortage and the rental cost crisis that we're in? Similar with bus drivers and teachers, where people just aren't being paid enough to go into those fields and are just leaving the area because the jobs aren't even, the ratio doesn't make sense for them to even work in the field.
Yeah. Tim Leach, let me go to you on this.
So, yes, I guess our view is that while I agree with Robert relative, you know, to maybe other areas of the Bay Area, housing costs in Sonoma County are still high relative to many other averages. And we're seeing it to be a very difficult environment for, if you will, just general workers, and especially unskilled workers, to be able to afford rentals within the area. And there is a shortage of rental property in general. And to Robert's point, you know, I think I really applaud city and county government for trying to help create more rental property, and there's projects that have been approved here just since the fires, but we have a long way to go to try to kind of even out that supply demand between you know, lower wage worker incomes and the availability of affordable rentals.
You want to weigh in here, Keith Woods?
I sure do. There's a slogan that's been adopted up here, like in many places, Sonoma Strong, Michael. And I'm going to add a second slogan regarding housing, Sonoma Creative, because we can't just rebuild what we've had necessarily. We're going to have to explore every creative new approach to housing possible. And the big topic of discussion before the fires is being reinvigorated now, and that is they get used to the letters ADU, accessory dwelling units, is going to be an important part of our future. What used to be called granny units that now are going to be for retired people, singles, couples, those that don't need a large house or a backyard. Accessory dwelling units are the focus for both the county and the city right now to figure how do we streamline that process? How do we adjust the fee structure so it's affordable to do? And I've heard Tim and I have, your other guest Tim and I have talked about how smart it would be as people rebuild in some areas like Coffee Park, which Tim mentioned, why not, since the hookups are there, why not create accessory dwelling units for those families, couples to live in while their home is being rebuilt on the property, and then that accessory dwelling unit can be a rental for somebody else. And Tim, you want to jump in on that? We had an interesting conversation, you and I, about that as a possibility.
I'd be happy to, Keith. This is This is one of our go-to strategies, Michael, is to try to address the need for housing in the shorter term, but also thinking about what impact it may have on the longer term. And so we have a very active program of building, as Keith referred to, as ADUs. We're trying to kind of humanize that into the word cottage. And so we have a whole program to build out a number of these cottages, smaller residences, with the idea that fire victim families who may not be living in very nice conditions right now from a temporary housing point of view could move initially into a cottage that could be built initially on the back of their lot if their lot is big enough to support that, while their primary house is being built. And then once their primary house is built, then the family could move out of the cottage or ADU into their main house. And now they've got a rental unit that can provide some additional income to that family, but it also adds to the rental stock of Sonoma County. So I really think it's a win-win, and we're even expanding that concept in thinking about building cottages that on unused open area for now. With the idea that the design of the cottage is such that we could actually, after that kind of temporary housing need is satisfied, then we could move that cottage onto its permanent placement on a lot in one of the fire-damaged areas.
Well, this gives testimony to how creative sometimes you can mm-hmm. be in the wake of disasters, and I commend you on that. And this is Allison writing, this is an opportunity to rethink what a neighborhood looks like. As people age, they don't need 2.5 bedrooms. Use common areas instead of backyards, less building materials, greater community. Let me go to more of your calls, and let's go next to Lee in Santa Rosa. Lee, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Thank you. Big fan. I'm calling because I am a builder for over 30 years, and my career is also straddled professional and academic. And to me, and I believe many thoughtful builders agree, that college isn't only for those going into academic and professional worlds, that it's an essential part of becoming a good and well-informed builder. But the basis for people growing into that career has been dismantled in our community. The school shops have all but disappeared. And I just wanted to bring attention to a couple of examples of where there's a glimmer of hope there. One would be Bullis Charter School in Los Altos teaches seventh graders woodworking on a three-week intercession basis. So that gives them, they go through design through construction of a small project. And then there's the ACE Mentor Program, and ACE is an acronym that stands for Architects, Contractors, and Engineers. And so architects, contractors, and engineers will actually volunteer their time for an after-school club-like environment where we mentor interested students. These students run the gamut of interest from architecture to construction. And so there's hope. It's just it would be really great if the community supported these with dollars.
Well, Lee, thank you for that. Appreciate hearing from you. And let me go back to Kathy Goodacre. Kathy, you got a lot of young people presumably who are going to have to delay college, and I wonder what your thoughts are as we reflect on that, or at least put it off if they want to work in the trades. But also people like Lee who can volunteer and who can really assist and be important in terms of the education side of this, availing yourself of them?
Yeah, I think, you know, in response to your caller, there is sort of this thinking out there, a belief that all of the high school wood shop and programs like that went away. And there was certainly a cutback on that many years ago. And there's also been significant focus for the last couple of decades on getting every student through a four-year university. So we have erred in that, and we've in that type of focus, we're really failing students, but we're also failing industry. Students need to know about choices, and they need to be able to pursue those choices and to achieve the highest level of post-secondary education to meet their interests, skills, and needs. And that's what's most important here. And it's not about, it's 4 year or not 4 year. It's really about helping students understand those choices and get inspired by these careers. So there are a lot of exciting things going on in Sonoma County around that, a lot of expansion of helping young people as early as middle school get involved in making things. Working with their hands again is so important, whether it's we're talking about the trades or engineering. A lot of our work these days needs to be really hands-on. So we do see a lot of support here in Sonoma County for that. We have a lot of high schools where students are building off-the-grid tiny homes, and they may or may not be going in that trade area, but they're learning life skills through that. So there has been quite an expansion of that, and through our foundation, which is unique not only in the region but for the state, we have seen incredible support financially and otherwise to really see these type of programs expand and give these opportunities for students.
Michael, can I supplement that from the Builders Exchange perspective for just a moment?
Just Keith Woods. Go ahead.
That your caller's right that there the number of so-called in the old days shop classes declined from the mid 1980s. We lost close to 75% to 80% of the shop teachers, shop classes, and the emphasis on the trades. That pendulum, at least in the North Bay, is swinging back. I've talked to a number of school boards and superintendents. Our very fine junior college in Sonoma State, parents are now what used to be the problem. They thought construction was what their kid would go into if all else failed. And now I'm hearing from parents that they see this not just as a good job, but a good career potential. Because you mentioned earlier minimum wage in construction, it doesn't exist. And you start out, in most cases, $18, $20 an hour. And within a decade, you're well over $50,000 in most cases as you develop skills. So fortunately, there's a renewed interest in the trades, and that pendulum is swinging back up here.
Yeah, I can't help thinking about one of the most famous American plays, Death of a Salesman. You know, there's more of Willie Loman in his hands and what he put into his house than all the selling he did on the road. Here's a listener. Let me go to you on this, Keith Woods. It says, are there any plans to use large builders? These developments started off as tract housing. It would be an efficient way to go if a builder can come in and have homeowners sign on to have their houses rebuilt en masse.
And that's underway right now. A number of large developers from around the Bay Area primarily are looking at developing a model where either they buy the property and sell it back with a home built on it from the homeowner. The difficulty is organizing that. You take 1,300 homes. A developer doesn't want to go in and do one home on one block and another home five blocks away. So our advice to homeowners, in we put together 10 tips on what you need to know before you hire a contractor, and one of the tips is bundle, if at all possible. Find your neighbors and others in your area that are willing to go in with one large developer or large contractor and architect, and bundle your project, and you'll be closer to being first in line. And frankly, the economies that go with bundling for the builder is going to be passed on to the consumer. So that's our first piece of advice to people.
And we go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Spinner in San Jose. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the things that I want to say about this conversation, and I realize that everybody's brilliant and smart, is everybody has ignored the role of unionized labor. And the reason why I say unionized labor is because Google is moving into the middle of downtown San Jose in 2 years or whatever. I'm a cook. I don't build houses. I understand that. But I do talk to people who build, and they are skilled laborers. And for some reason, nobody asks them, hey, how would you do this? Everybody's always trying to do something bigger. Everybody's something to do smaller. Everybody's something to do larger. And it's like, wait a minute. What about the community? What about the people that actually have to live?
Spinner, let me take the question in a broad sense, but also maybe even in a specific way, and go to Robert Eiler on this. The role of unions is really what he's bringing up here. Robert Eiler?
Agreed. And we're likely to see a lot of union labor engaged in this effort.
I'm sorry?
I said we're likely to see a lot of union labor engaged in this effort.
Well, so, yeah, but how does it affect the whole effort, I think, is really the – I mean, how do you see it in terms of reckoning with what needs to be done and what has to be done?
If you look at it as part of the labor supply, it's
yes.
just simply another piece of the puzzle. It is something that over time, and this is something that the unions could consider, is this an opportunity to actually generate more – workers to come into the union once the older workers naturally leave the trades and see it as a pipeline to apprenticeships and an expansion of the available workforce. But it's unlikely to be the total puzzle. It'll be a large part of it, I would imagine.
And how do you see it, Keith Woods?
I'm not sure I understood your caller's question, so I'm wrestling with that. All I know
is... I think he was wrestling with the role of unions, basically.
they will be critical in this. They've got great apprenticeship programs, training programs in every discipline of construction, and they are an absolutely critical partner in all of this. And in a construction core program, the training for seniors that Kathy mentioned, we don't care where they end up. We want them interested in construction and making a life decision that this could be the field for them. And if they go into a union program, great. If they go to work directly for a non-union contractor, doesn't matter to us at all. But the bottom line, it will take all hands on deck to rebuild our community within a five-year period, or even in some cases, we fear up to a decade. So everybody's going to have a role in this, including the important player, the unions.
Do you have any idea the percentage of construction workers who are union-bound or union-affiliated, Keith Woods?
Well, those are separate questions. Union-bound, I have no idea. You could talk to the North Bay Labor Council. They could answer that. But the makeup up here is generally regarded to be 85% or so of the construction industry is made up of non-union contractors and workers. 15% are union-affiliated. But those are ballpark numbers because at our contractors association, we don't care. We've got both union and non-union firms. But that's the rough estimate that I see given, Robert.
And let me go back to Robert Eiler on this. Robert Eiler, as long as we're talking about rough estimates, do we have any idea in terms of we're getting labor coming in from all different sources as best we can in all this, but what about immigrant labor and particularly undocumented immigrant labor?
We don't know, in fact, what the composition of the labor force is going to be to get this done. The rough estimates are that for about every $1 billion worth of reconstruction, there'll be a demand just north of 5,500 workers. So if you use that as an algorithm to estimate the number of workers who will be engaged, that's one rough way of doing it. The larger issue is how many billions are there going to be per year? Because let's say there's $1 billion of reconstruction per annum, you would have about 5,500 workers on the job per annum for the number of years it took to get to the full stage of rebuilding. So the revenue generated by rebuilding will ultimately dictate the number of workers engaged. And a lot of that depends on the wage structure involved. As wages rise, the number of workers is likely to fall a little bit based on the $1 billion algorithm.
Another caller joining us. Jim, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Is there any program to train people in the prisons? A lot of these young men and women have nothing to do when they're given $50 or whatever it is and let out the front door of the prison. Is there any training programs for these people? This gives them a future, and this gives them training that leads them to think beyond their past, beyond their drugs and crime.
Kathy Goodacre, I don't know if this is in your backyard, but do you know about prison training at all?
Actually, I'm going to turn that over to Keith. He's raising his hand here in the studio.
Oh, all right.
Michael and your caller, there actually are programs that have been tied in to law enforcement to get prison labor to help on certain projects. There becomes a problem with that, and that is safety issues, OSHA requirements. You can't just put somebody up on a roof because they can hammer down a shingle. So there are some limitations to this. But I've seen successful programs, one out of Sacramento through the Sheriff's Department, I believe. And so that's a possibility. But like anything else, it comes with some problems related to safety. So we've got to be very, very careful.
Tim Leach.
One program that I'm aware of, Michael, not directly training in prison, but an NGO that I'm familiar with, Volunteers for America, does actively train previous prison inmates in construction and other vocational kinds of roles as part of their process of trying to help former inmates get back involved in
society.
So they
work with ex-cons, basically.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
Matthew writes, as an apprentice carpenter and plumber, it's hard to get hired because no one wants to hire you unless you're already a journeyman. Supply and demand suggests that wages should grow. I'm still waiting for that. So where does one go to get a job? Keith Woods.
I'm shocked. I'm a little shocked to hear the comment because there literally is almost not a day that goes by that one of our contractor members is saying, do you have somebody skilled or otherwise? And I'm surprised that anybody that wants to work can't get or doesn't already have a job because the industry is hungry for people to get into it. And any level of training, for the most part, is being accepted now by people in the industry, and they'll do their training or they ought to be in the union and get their training. But, boy, if you've got any skills and want to work, it's hard to believe that you couldn't get a job.
Now, let me get Robert Eiler back to a comment from another listener, Professor Eiler. This is Matt, who says, forget the workers. The planning and permit department for the county is a disaster. It took me 7 months for a permit approval, and that was before the fire. But, of course, as we've been saying, things have managed to speed up here. Robert Eiler?
Yes, correct. And so I think that, you know, our city and county governments are trying to fast-track as much as they can, and I think trying to really assess where they can change things going forward as well, not just for this one episode, but in fact thinking forward, because if the supposition is that there was a housing crisis previously and there was a shortage of supply, this episode exacerbating that issue now leaves an opportunity in this wake to say, what can we do better, not now, but 5 years from now, thinking that when we build and we have population growth, we're going to potentially have to face permitting issues and policy issues and, you know, down in the next decade. So for now, what we hear out of city and county government, and Keith alluded to this earlier, is that they really are looking at it as a way of fast-tracking this getting done. Unfortunately, you might have some people with some tough stories, and if you talk to city and county officials, they will tell you that the tough stories have two sides. And so it's this sort of constant debate about who's slower, what the problems are. But bottom line, every indicator is that the city and county government is going to try to get this done as fast and efficiently as possible.
Yeah, but they opened my eyes a little bit, Robert, when I talked to city and county people saying, you've got a shortage of workers in your world. We face the same thing in government.
Yes.
We don't have enough
permit
people and investigators and people that are trained. Plan checkers, so they've got their own problems.
They do, and Keith, that's a really good point. And let me just add to what Keith just said, because one of the things we need to recognize too is that training is necessary throughout the supply chain on this issue. It's not just in the construction side. It really is every single domino that's going to fall in terms of inspections, in terms of county and city permitting processes, architecture, design, appliance installers, the whole gamut is now unfortunately in need of labor.
And Robert Eiler, another dimension to this is raised by one of our listeners, Brittany, who writes, what precautions will be taken to ensure the Coffee Park neighborhood is built in a way that doesn't allow a fire to easily blow through again? It's zoned as a high fire danger area, yet the contractors who initially built it were able to get around many of the building standards that were needed.
I personally think, and Keith maybe would provide more, or Tim, and it's really going to boil down to how they look at the permitting with respect to fire resistance and fire resiliency. One of my suppositions is that they're actually going to probably lean over code with the idea that they can, at least in a sense, say that they said they looked at the code for fire resilience and said, we're actually going to go beyond that, recognizing this in this round. However, they also have to balance that against how many units they can put in those same places, because in general, the materials that would be potentially more fire resistant may in fact take up more space.
Yeah, but if you're fast tracking and you don't have enough personnel, you've got some serious challenges.
You do, and there's going to be challenges regardless of how you look at the fire resiliency or not. So that's just one component of a large continuum of components.
All right. I want to bring another caller on here, David, waiting patiently to join us from Santa Rosa. David, you're on.
Yes, I wanted to expand on that last subject of using non-flammable building materials. This addresses not only that long-term reduced risk of the next fire, but it also generally it requires less labor to use aerated concrete, autoclaved aerated concrete, fiber-reinforced aerated concrete, and steel framing and things like that can certainly are amenable to off-site construction and bringing in modules. These all address the labor issue. And
you're making some good points, David. Let me get to Tim Leach here.
So there's a fundamental challenge, though, which I think we're facing, all of us that are trying to really grapple with rebuilding, for example, neighborhoods like Coffee Park, and that is that 1,300 homes destroyed in Coffee Park. 1,300 individual land homeowner families who individually need to make a decision about what they're going to rebuild, and there really is no overriding that I see, and any overriding policy to shift the style of construction that was used in Coffee Park, and what's being put forward by city and county right now is that. They will fast track permits if you rebuild essentially the same house that you had, but just upgrade it to current code.
All right, we've got seconds left here, and people want to know how they can volunteer. I've got a construction worker who wants to volunteer and go to Habitat for Humanity,
Sonoma County. That's one of our biggest assets, is an army of volunteers.
And please, I want to remind listeners that KRCB Radio in Sonoma County is where our guests are. I thank the radio station there. Thanks to Tim Leach, thanks to Kathy Goodacre, Keith Woods, and Robert Eiler, and thanks to you, our listeners. We would not be here without you. And let me give some thanks to some people behind the scenes here. Forums produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Katie Springer, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai. Ethan Lindsay is our executive producer, our editor, and Hallie Kernan, executive producer.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.